Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
It's America's 250th birthday, and I'm going to shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, they've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging, storage, and those signature Bob-opedic seats. So, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Chad Bettis threw two pitches for Colorado and did so nearly 4 hours into the game on Wednesday night, a double by Bogaerts, intentional walk, requiring just the home plate umpire pointing to first. But then the next pitch, walk-off single, Michael Chavis. Had he done it at 11-11, that would have been really cool. He always makes a wish at 11-11. AM and PM considers that his lucky thing. Well, the Savas Chavis bell actually rung at 10:57 instead, and that was absolutely fine. Hail to the Chief. Sox win in 10. They split with Colorado. We review it right now.
It's your Daily Sox Podcast. It's your Daily Sox Podcast. It's where you're going to find out what the Sox are doing.
Don't know about you guys, but how much fun are you having watching Michael Chavis just smash his way onto the scene? Where it all goes from here, nobody knows. But for now, thank you for coming to Lowe's. Relax, enjoy the show. Josh Lewin with you. Chavis, you might remember, had an 0-for-22 his second week at AAA. He had an 0-for-19 in his third week in the majors. He steered out of both skids quite nicely, hitting really long home runs. The one the other night, Tuesday, kind of reminded me, I know this was at Sky Dome, but Manny Ramirez, anybody remember the 491 in Toronto that he pulled into the top deck of the Sky Dome? Or Rogers Center, excuse me. That's going to be Chavis when the Red Sox finally get to Toronto. I really feel that. Is he Dan Uggla? I have floated that before. If you don't remember Dan Uggla, he was 5'11", 210, second baseman. But like Chavis, kind of built like a soft drink machine. Chavis is listed at 5'10", 210. And Uggla, each of his first 6 years in the majors, and he debuted around the same age as Chavis, Uggla hammered between 27 and 36 home runs for the Marlins. That's not exactly a pitcher's or a hitter's park back in the day at the old Dolphin Stadium. He was a decent enough second baseman. He played some other positions, too, when needed. He was only a career 241 hitter, and I got to think that's more of Chavis's level with the kind of swing he takes. But as of right now, about 4 weeks into his big league career, let's try on 296 and be very happy with that. Of course, he came up, like most infielders do, as a shortstop. But turning shortstops into second baseman is a very common position switch. Dustin Pedroia did it. He was a shortstop in college. And we've talked about this before, but the slide rule at second base now, which debuted in 2016, changed the nature of that position. You can be a less nimble second baseman now, and that is Chavis. Travis Shaw, remember him? Started 36 games at second base for Milwaukee last year. They've used Mike Moustakas there. Austin Barnes, who is a catcher in the minors, has played parts of 50 games at second base for the Dodgers. So Chavis is just part of that trend. He was the hero, walking it off in the bottom of the 10th after the Red Sox let it get away. They had two in the first, three in the third, took a nice comfy 5-0 lead for Eduardo Rodriguez, but then two in the fourth, three, and a really messy seventh for Colorado. Bullpen gave it up a little bit. Marcus Walden saved the day. He's been amazing. Two and a third innings, four strikeouts. He retired all seven batters he faced. 0.54 ERA since the Michael Chavis debut of April 20th. One walk, 19 strikeouts, sinister slider. He was great. And at 30 pitches, 21 of them strikes, they figured, okay, that's enough. Let's get Heath Hembree in there. He had to navigate through it. Brandon Workman eventually at the end coming on to throw the final 9 pitches, only 3 of them for strikes, by the way. But he gets a win as the Red Sox come back in the 10th. They almost won it in the 9th. Crazy play as Betts blooped a ball down the left field line. Benintendi was going to score. He was running on contact with 2 outs from first base. But the ball kind of getting in between a bunch of fielders. Trevor Story got hurt chasing it. The ball finds its way into the left field seats down that sidewall at Fenway. It's probably the only ballpark where that is an automatic double bouncing into the crowd. And by the way, small pet peeve, that's an automatic double. Anytime a ball bounces and goes into the crowd, that's not a ground rule double. Ground rule is something particular to a particular ballpark. Every double or every ball that hits and bounces into the stands everywhere, that's a double. So they call that an automatic double. Just a small thing just to be a dork. And nobody's better at that than I am. The Red Sox with, we mentioned, Chavis eventually winning it. Xander Bogaerts set it up. He began the inning with that double off the center field wall. J.D. Martinez, another home run. And he has just been fantastic. He's homered in each of his last 3 games, 4 home runs total. That matches a career-long streak for him. 17 runs batted in his last 17 games. He has 5 homers now in his last 7. That was a drought of 15 games without that was right before. Benintendi and Betts combined to go 5-for-9. They had combined to go 0-for-11 the night before with 6 strikeouts, so this was better. And Rodriguez was okay. 6 innings, 9 hits. He only walked 1. He struck out 10. That is a season high, and I like the only one walk thing. He extended his scoreless streak to 15 before he allowed a couple in the 4th inning. At least they kept Nolan Arenado in the yard this time. I love watching that guy play. Now, I don't know about you guys, but you've probably heard the story. He almost played for Alex Cora for Puerto Rico in the 2017 World Baseball Classic. He tried to recruit him. Arenado's won a gold glove each of his 6 seasons with the Rockies, been an all-star for the past 4. Signed that 8-year, $260 million contract extension this spring. Second highest paid player in the game by annual average value, or what they call now AAV, about $32.5 million. I think the guy's worth it. And watch out, because Mookie Betts is coming. He's going to get paid sometime pretty soon, too. Who else? Christian Vasquez, 2-for-4. Yeah, Christian Vasquez is a 290 hitter, guys. And he keeps throwing out base runners, too. We got Ian Desmond to end the 6th inning. He's thrown out 6 of the last 8 that have tried to run on him. So real good stuff there. But I think we got to take it to Michael Chavis and get his take on how it all ended. Let's join him now. He met with the guys after the game through the magic of a post-game radio show.
All right, Michael, congratulations. Your first career walk-off. What was your approach there?
Just kind of keeping things simple. I hadn't seen Bettis before, so I literally looked at the scouting report like 2 seconds before walking up. I didn't even get to track a pitch because they walked Evers before I even got on deck. So I was just trying to get a good pitch to hit, and in my mind I was thinking a single scores them. No bogey can run. So it all worked out on the first pitch.
You know, Mike, I was just talking about, I think it was that single in the 7th as well. You know, there are times when you take chances and maybe you miss a slider, but then you get back into your approach and you lay off that same pitch 2 times in a row. Is that just something that you've always had control of, the strike zone?
Somewhat, yeah. It's something that I've grown on and something I've definitely gotten better on. But it just kind of it depends on the situation. You know, some situations you can let it loose a little bit more, get a little expand the zone maybe. But you fall 2 strikes. I think that was a 3-2 slider, the one you're talking about in the seventh. So you just got to shorten up and just catch a barrel, honestly.
Mike, you had that 0-for for last week, and then Sunday a couple of hits fell in, opposite field hits, and you've taken off again. Did you make an adjustment?
A lot of it was mental, honestly. I did spend some time in the cage on my own, just swinging things out, feeling things out after one of our day games the other day. But a lot of it was mental. I was getting my pitch to hit, and I was just missing it, which is why I was falling in some tough counts, which was the main problem during that 0-for thing. But, you know, we don't need to talk about the 0-for. We can focus on the positive.
Yeah, you know, because I want to talk about you defensively. Now, you got Carlos Febles and Alex Cora, 2 great infielders, and you only had 6 games down in AAA, but made a couple of great plays here, you know, today, recently. You starting to feel more comfortable there defensively?
Definitely, and that goes out to, like you said, Fabs and AC. Also with Dustin and Nooney and Holt and everybody. Everybody's been helping me as much as they can, which has been incredible. I couldn't be more thankful for that as well. But the work that's being put in before the game, I think that's what's showing up during the game. And they're doing their best to make me comfortable and make sure I get reps at different areas with shifts and everything like that. So I'm definitely happy with it, how things are going.
Well, this certainly is a huge win for the team, especially after last night, getting such great pitching and then not winning in extra innings. This was really big and huge thing for the Red Sox.
Oh, definitely. I was saying it in one of the innings. I was like, there's no way we're doing it back-to-back nights. There is no way. And thankfully, I was the one to make sure we didn't.
So the legend of the ice horse continues.
It sure does. I guess so.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, Michael. We always love having you on.
I love being here. It means I did something good.
All right. Congratulations. His first career walk-off hit for Michael Chavis.
All right, that's Chavis. And I love that the first three players to meet Chavis after that game-winning hit, it was Mookie, it was David Price, and Chris Sale. Let's talk about Chris Sale before we get to Alex Cora. Back to that Tuesday night dynamite. I don't want to gloss this over. First major league pitcher ever with 17 strikeouts in seven innings. Minor leagues, he has some work to do. If you care, there's a legend of a game from the early 1950s where some dude named Ron Nechai from Monongahela, Pennsylvania, struck out 27 in a nine-inning game. Did it for the Pirates farm team in Bristol, Virginia. Bristol against Welch, West Virginia. Next start, they say he struck out 24, then 20, then 19. So it's 90 strikeouts over four starts. Guy eventually got called all the way up to Pittsburgh that summer, went 1-6. He developed ulcers and a sore arm, and he never pitched in the majors again. So kind of a sad story, but I just thought I'd regale you with that. They're calling Chris Sale in the clubhouse now, and I love this. They're calling him the conductor because he's punching tickets like a train conductor would every strikeout. If you've been on a train, there is no punch card anymore. It's that little slidey thing. It's all very new age now. It goes ba-ding. There's no punching going on, but I like the conductor thing. I really do. And there's some controversy lingering. I don't think it should be because, you know, with 17 strikeouts in seven innings, some people were saying, let him go out there, at least throw eight innings, see if he can get to 20 and match Clemens and Kerry Wood and be part of a very select fraternity. I'm glad that that didn't happen. I remember, and I'm sure you guys remember it more, John Farrell's decision a couple years ago to let Sale chase that 300 strikeout late in September in Baltimore. He got there, but it took him 111 pitches, and he allowed five runs in five innings in his next start. Then he got completely blitzed in game one of the division series against the Astros. Cora went the other way. He picked the safe route, and I like that. An incredible 59 strikeouts in his last 33 innings. Maybe the return of Sandy Leon is part of it. Maybe. I know some people think that, and that's fine. But, boy, from what was happening the first three or four starts of the season, him talking about how he was an embarrassment, this is so much better. And if you want to go back and listen to yesterday's podcast, there's a lot more info about Chris Sale there. I just thought I'd squeak out a little bit more right here. Now we get to the manager, Alex Cora, whose team has improved to 23-20 and getting ready for Houston, which is 29-15, by the way. So Alex Cora, knowing that this is a big weekend coming up, first enjoying what happened at Fenway Wednesday night.
The last inning?
Yeah.
Well, bogey aggressive in the first pitch, and he drove that ball. It's something that I like him to do, you know, be aggressive in the strike zone. They're getting ahead of him, and obviously it's very tough to hit behind in the count at this level. And then obviously they made a decision with Rafi, testament to who he is. And then, you know, Chavis got a pitch elevated. Didn't try to do too much. You know, stay up the middle. And, you know, we got a happy off day, you know. That's a good baseball team. Really good. You know, they pay attention to details. The at-bats are good. I know they struck out and all that, but they keep grinding. They got a good bullpen. They play good defense, you know. So, you know, it was a tough series. Obviously, yesterday it was disappointed. Today it had the same taste for a while there. But we ended up winning, and now we enjoyed the off day and be ready for Friday.
What was wrong tonight with Rodriguez?
Just that last inning, you know, he limited the damage earlier in the game. We got all those lefties coming up, and there's a trust factor. There's a guy that we believe, and he needs to go deep into the game. And the matchups, although he has struggled against lefties, you know, we felt like, you know, you get those guys, and then we get Barnsey with one or two outs and get that out and get him out of there. But it didn't happen, you know, and then, you know, we were in a bad situation there. Barnsley did everything he could, but he's tough. You know, he pitched two yesterday, so then Waldy did what he did and gave us a chance to win.
As good as Rodriguez has been, and you guys have been happy that he's going deeper into games, so what do you see with the third time through the order, and why maybe guys are starting to hit him much better in that?
I think today was just, you know, we got a weak ground ball in the middle and then doubled down the line and then he hit the next guy. It wasn't like he got hit hard. So, you know, he made some good pitches in the previous inning and the order was there for us, you know, and we were like the leadoff guy was going to be the last hitter anyways. You know, we were going to a righty, but he wasn't able to finish it. But I think overall, you know, you look at the line, obviously it looks ugly. But he pitched a lot better than that. He just that inning wasn't good. That's about it.
How impactful was it to have a guy like Waldman showing swinging this stuff?
I mean, at this level, you don't want contact late in games. Let's be honest. You know, you saw Wirt, the last hitter. You know, it was kill breaking ball from pitch one. And you don't want to say if you walk him, you walk him, but you're not going to give in. And Waldy with Tapia, the first hitter, it was kill slider, slider, until he swings and misses or you walk him. That's the way it is. That's the way it works at this level now. That's why everybody likes bullpens. You don't want contact. You know, if there's contact, it's a fly ball or weak ground ball. You know, there's not, like, try to induce him into a double play. And his stuff is playing great at this level right now. You know, the slider is good, the cutter is good, the fastball up is great. And he was amazing today. We put him in a situation, you know, had leverage one, tie game, and he gave us more than enough for us to have a chance to win the game.
We always have reason to ask you about anybody other than JD after these games, but he's seemingly getting locked in here. What are you seeing from him the last few days?
Driving the ball to right center. You know, for a while there, I think he hit a few fly balls here early in the season that, you know, in the summer they're gone. So, but lately he's been more disciplined in the strike zone. Obviously, he's getting pitches in his zone, and he's not missing them. But at the same time, you know, he's working the count and getting to those counts to take advantage of that. It's always good when the other two guys get on base. That was good to see. You know, I think that's the first time that those two guys got probably back-to-back hits in the first inning, you know, this whole season. But, you know, when he has traffic in front of him, you know, he goes the other way. He, you know, it's amazing what he does on a nightly basis, you know, because I bet, you know, when you come here, you're like, you don't want that guy to beat you. But at the same time, you know, you still have to pitch him. And when he gets his pitches, he's not missing them lately.
Only two pitches there in the 10th. How important is that aggressiveness, you know, two first pitch swings? And
pitches in the zone. And you don't get too many of those, especially late in games. We got some, you know, Rafi, the one hit. When he hit that ball, I thought it was gone. But you know, when with the stuff that bullpens are showing, you know, when you get pitches ahead, you know, you don't want to miss them. And we didn't miss those two in the last inning.
That is the manager, and no game on Thursday. Getting ready now for the Astros. Gerrit Cole against Rick Porcello on Friday night. So far, those guys are combined 7-7. ERA of around 4.5. That can only get better. Quick minor league spotlight for you. Brian Johnson has started his rehab assignment at AAA. He's capped at 30 days. Brock Holt is going to have 20 days on his now right eye / right shoulder situation. And a little shout out to Jaron Duran. The kid out of Long Beach State, 7th-round pick in 2018, last year, leads all the minor leagues in batting average. He's beyond Ted Williams. He's at .409 at last check. That's worthy of inclusion. On the podcast, it's called Sox Daily, and if you haven't subscribed yet, please do. Go ahead and rate it, if you wouldn't mind. If you do have the iTunes thing going, give it the 5 Uber stars, if you'd be so kind. Write a nifty little summation of why you like it or whatever, and maybe that will encourage more people to be tuning in. I think we're doing pretty well so far, but the more we can spread the gospel. Let people know what this thing is out there. That would be very, very cool. So thank you in advance. And the Red Sox, thank you. Walking it off just shy of 4 hours. 6 runs, 13 hits, no errors, 5-11-0 for the Coloradans, the most rectangular state in the union. This is Josh. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of Dash Pass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier entirely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
You don't brag about your car's resale value until years later when it proves you made the right call. And Toyota makes that choice easy. For the sixth year in a row, Toyota was named the best resale value brand by Kelley Blue Book, with Camry, Tacoma, and 4Runner all earning best in class. Because when you buy a vehicle that's built to last, you drive away with value you can count on. Shop Toyota.com to learn more. Vehicles projected resale value and best resale value awards are specific to the 2026 model year. For more information, visit Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple, it's refreshing!